you very much, Nick, and welcome to. And on your screens, I hope that you'll see the beginning of a slide presentation, a short one, which we will use for starting off the discussion. And or in particular, you see the headline of new GTLD program, core of the matter, and a subtitle, what kind of internet do you want? And that's where we want your input at the very end. So now let's see if I can make this move, and I can. And here we go. Now you see that internet is not yet perfect. When we uploaded the presentations, we lost pie chart that should be in the middle. And just to jog your memory about where we come from, and top-level domains currently in the root, where we have, of course, the GTLDs, and you should see a little slice of a pizza there with 21 GTLDs, and also another little slice of the pizza with 11 IDN. Are only for test purposes with example in some 11 different scripts, non-Latin scripts like Cyrillic, Greek, Arabic, Hebrew, and so on. And in addition to that, the majority of the current top-level domains are CCTLDs, country code top-level domains, which are, of course, administered by either local governments as such or by designated CCTLD operators. So, sorry for not being able to show that pizza in its nice colors, but, I guess it will be possible to send it around in the full version. Let's proceed to the next one. Been at it for some time. I mean, already before the inception of ICANN, we had, of course, the top-level domains, which then they were structured in a particular way. We had .com, .net, and .org. Then we had a proof-of-concept round, as is frequently called, when a number of additions were made, .aero, .biz, .coop, .info, and so on. We've got another little error here, so it doesn't display properly, but .info and .pro be on the right-hand side. .mobi, when it comes to what should be the 2004 round, here it's presented as the 2001 round, which was the follow-up to the proof-of-concept round, and whether only sponsored top-level domains were invited, and a number of those were added to the root. After some time, .asia, .cat,
.left,
so on. Of course, this has been a major, this is a task for ICANN to see to that new GTLDs are introduced, and it's been so since the very beginning. And with a new policy and a new program, change in the internet space, perhaps the biggest. Also note that the deployment or the plans for new GTLDs have attracted a lot of attention.
Joined.
Potential applicants as well as all stakeholders interested in the development of the namespace. And it should be said that from the very beginning,
ready, honey?
Multi-stakeholder community has been involved in the development.
What do you want for breakfast?
Of the policy, and now also in the implementation of implementation plans for the new GTLDs. For some,
guys, what do you
clear,
want?
I think I grabbed the. I was on a speakerphone before. I think this will sound with a little less echo.
Okay, what do you want, Josh?
Can you hear me now?
What? Oh, hot late.
Okay. I'll continue. Now, just to mention a few potential benefits of new GTLDs, of course, this is an instrument to foster both the creativity, innovation, and the choice, and also, at a very core level, the competition in the domain name space. And second very important aspect is, of course, the introduction of internationalized domain names, also in the route for GTLDs. This is perhaps the biggest step of them all, where those not using Latin scripts would be able to use their own script fully out in order to reach desirable content. Currently, their IDN, well, prolific, yes, to a certain extent, but only on the second level. Just a little short recap of the policy, which then was a result of two-year development work, very intense such by the generic name supporting organization, with input from all other supporting organization and advisory committees and from the general public as such. But they finalized and approved a policy by a super majority, meaning two-thirds of the votes, and in most cases unanimous on the various components of it. And that was done on the 6th of September last year. The core of the policy is a set of principles and recommendations and implementation guidelines, where the central core, one could say, are the recommendations, which we could go into some detail, if you wish, later on. A few characteristics of the policy, perhaps a little bit contrasting to what has been done before, is that this is an open approach. And one could call it objection-based, so it's not a preset structure that the applicants would have to fit into semantically, which of course would be one approach, or a limitation on numbers. So the applicant, they will propose their own preferred GTLD strings, and there is no predefined limit on the number of foreseen GTLDs. We've got assurance from the technical community that a substantial increase in the route is defensible and wouldn't bring any problems with the security and stability of the internet. And it's clearly stated by the GNSO that IDN GTLDs should be included. Of course, this is conditional upon the readiness of the preparations for being able to introduce IDNs at the root level, which have advanced pretty far, and as you know, there are test programs, live tests going on right now, as well as a revision of the IDNA protocol. Another aspect of more mundane interest that the GNSO policy says that the fees
joined
for the application, they should recover the costs.
Ella Bozzo for RNA Partners.
Joined.
So the fees should recover the costs involved, and also that the vision from the GNSO side was to have an ongoing process eventually. But realistically, that can't be achieved in the short run, so it would have to start off with rounds. So that's very, very short and too limited recap of the policy as such, but it will transpire through the implementation work. And I now do a handover to Carla, for her to go into the more interesting part, which is, of course, well, The what we're going to do with the implementation of this. Maybe I take the next slide as well, Carla. This is we said number 6. I think I'm on number 7 now. But well, a little more on the policy themes, since there were four themes, which actually this is mirroring the terms of reference for the committee that worked on this for 2 years. First of all, should there be any new GTLDs in a general sense? And that, of course, sets the overall objective for everything else. Secondly, what should the allocation methods be, so which sets the requirements for the process? And thirdly, what would the selection criteria be, which in turn sets the standards and requirements for the applications to come? And finally, what contractual conditions should prevail? How should the applicants behave in the future on steady state development and in operation? Carla, are you there? Hello. Does anybody hear me?
Joined.
Yes.
You're still there?
Yes, I'm still here. I'm trying to hand over to Carla now for...
Carla, you may need to unmute yourself by pressing *7.
Which I did. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes. Now you're...
Yes, perfectly.
Hear you loud and clear. So over to you, Carla.
Thank you, Olaf. And I'd like to remind everybody that the detailed policy is... available as the new GTLD page. So if you go right to the bottom, you can see all of the policy work and the specifics on the recommendations, and also the GENESO page has the policy. Now moving towards the new GTLD program. So what is the new GTLD program? This is the development of the criteria, the process, and the tools by which the organizations around the world will be able to apply for the new GTLDs in the near future. What do we know so far about the applicant? The applicant
joined.
Can be any public or privately established company or entity from anywhere in the world. So we expect, or we could potentially have applicants that are for-profit organizations, non-for-profit organizations, governments, and they can come from any part of the world. All applicants will have to follow every step and rules that are specified in the RFP, the request for proposal. The RFP is a guidebook that will tell all of the applicants how the process will work, what they will have to go through in terms of evaluation and the different paths, what they need to do, what they need to submit, and so forth. All applicants will have to demonstrate organizational, operational, technical, and financial capability to run a registry for the proposed TOD. And all applicants will have to pay an application fee. This application fee has not yet been determined by ICANN. If you recall, what Olaf said is that according to the recommendations, we need to have, you know, cost recovery or revenue neutral for the new GTODs. So what we're doing right now is we're putting out their costing models, evaluating how we are going to cost this program. And after this is done, we are going to have a better idea on what the application fee will be. I do realize that there are some numbers around, you know, people talking about some numbers or speculating about numbers, but none of this comes officially from ICANN. We have not yet defined what this application fee is. Now, that said, I also would like to clarify that there is one application fee, but that might not be the only fee an applicant will pay. Another fee that we are contemplating is a user registration fee. Because this is going to be a web-based application, we will probably charge a user fee for all of the applicants to enter into a system where they can electronically submit their application. Other fees may apply depending on the path an application will take. So if an application is objected, then there's, you know, potentially there are objection fees. But this is very specific to that TOD and that applicant. The application process itself. So as I mentioned before, the guidelines for the applicant will be published in advance. This is one of the visions that the GENESO had on the recommendation that everybody would know in advance on what to do and how to prepare for this application process. And what we will be doing is to publish a draft of this guidelines or the RFP, which we usually call it, and then the final RFP. And I'll explain to you towards the end what happens during the draft publication and the final publication and what we can do, you know, during the two different periods of time. There's going to be an open application period. So, and this is going to be predefined. So there's going to be a number of calendar days that we have not yet set in which we have the application period. It starts on one day, and then after an X number of days, it ends. An important thing for you to know at this period of time is that as we receive applications, we will not be publishing to the world right away who's applying for. We'll close the application period, and then we will publish all at once all of the applicants and the strings that have been applied for. This way, people don't have to really worry about timing when the application comes in, sending in the last minute, so we have, you know, some kind of peak at the last moment of applications. This application period will, the timelines around this application period and how it's going to work will be also published in the detailed guidelines. So the application will be web-based, which means that applicants would be able to log in and they will see all of the questions that they need to answer. They are going to be able to upload documents or supporting documents that would illustrate or prove the answers that were given. The system would also provide with an algorithm that would check the string that is being applied for. There are some rules about what people can or cannot apply in terms of strings. They're very technical, so we have a system in the beginning that helps the applicants to, you know, navigate through those rules and ensure that they are following them from a string standpoint. We're also envisioning to have a customer support during this application period, so the applicants can, you know, talk to us if there is any technical issue or otherwise, so they are, you know, basically, you know, we have support for the customers as, or the customers or as the applicants as they navigate through the application system. Once all of the applications are lodged and we have announced these applications to the world, and this is going to happen on our web page, the initial evaluation will start. Initial evaluation is often being described as being in different areas or buckets. So we will evaluate the applicant from a business standpoint. So is this organization capable of running a registry from an operational and financial organizational standpoint? Is this applicant also able to run a registry from a technical standpoint? And so the business evaluation, the technical evaluation are two areas in which the applicant should expect to see questions, and evaluators would look at the questions to basically see whether or not this applicant is capable of doing or running the registry according to what it's been proposed. In addition to checking the applicant itself from a business and technical standpoint operationally, we also check the proposed string. So one of the recommendations says that the proposed string should not lead to technical instability. So what we did is we have set aside a set of rules that will tell the applicant what they can or cannot do with the TOD that is proposed. So, for instance, after the dot, is there a limit on the minimum and maximum number of characters? Is there a limit on how those characters are composed? Is there a specific rule that applies if the string is an IDM string and so forth? The rules that apply to ASCII you can find in a DNS stability paper that was published for public comments at the beginning of the year. We are expanding this paper to add, you know, some very specific IDN rules or clarification on IDNs as it applies to the string. Another consideration when checking the proposed string is to see whether or not it is an existing reserved name. So the list of reserved names has not yet been finalized, but there's going to be a list of reserved names on the top level, and applicants could not apply for the words that are on this reserved name list. And also, obviously, applicants cannot apply for an existing TOD, right? And existing TOD is not only for the GTODs, it is also for the CCTODs, the two-character extensions. And the last one on this TOD string is that a string may not cause or should not cause string confusion. And this is the area where when somebody looks at the string from a visual standpoint, are they confused, you know, from what they see with something else? The algorithm that is going to be available on the web-based application will allow the applicants to see right away whether or not the proposed string is identical or similar to a reserved name, an existing TOD, and also other applications during this round. Any issues that are raised during the initial evaluation would be addressed on an extended evaluation. One of the reasons you have an initial and an extended evaluation is to allow for TODs that do not have any, or applications basically, that do not have any specific issue and are straightforward, not to be stopped in the process and be able to move ahead. The objection process. We are going to have
Jean-Christophe Vigne.
A predefined
joined
objection period. In this predefined objection period, third-party objectors would be able to file an objection, and we also have a beginning and an end of the number of calendar days that this objection filing can take place. So it's not a continuous
Roger Castillo.
Objection.
Joined.
And then there's the actual objection proceedings. All of the objection processes will take place outside ICANN, and they are going to be done by dispute resolution providers. We are still talking to some parties in the industry that would be able to provide the service for us. The potential groups for objections as it stands now in the process are string confusion, and this is the recommendation number 2. Infringement of rights, and this is the recommendation number 3. Morality and public order, which is recommendation number 6. And community objection, recommendation number 20. So each of these recommendations and each of these groups would have its own guiding principles, who can object, specifics of who can object, how the objection is going to take place, who's going to manage the objection process, and so forth. String contention. So we contemplate that there is a possibility that two or more qualified applicants for an identical or similar TOD could successfully pass the whole evaluation process and, you know, even the objection either not being objected or successfully go through the objection process as well. In this particular case, ICANN needs to have a mechanism to define or to select who is going to have the TOD. And there are two different mechanisms that we are right now considering. One is comparative evaluation. And comparative evaluation specifically applies to the applicant or applicants that are community-based applicants. So if an applicant at the beginning proposed a string and they are saying this string is a string such and such and it is a string that is being proposed or will serve a specific community and they so describe like that. This is a community-based application. And being a community-based application would allow this applicant to select whether or not they want to go through a comparative evaluation. If a community-based applicant does not select comparative evaluation, then if it reaches a situation like that, that you have string contention, it would go automatically to auction. So the comparative evaluation is a mechanism that a community-based applicant could select at the beginning of the application process whether or not they want to go through. And the other mechanism under consideration in case we have the string contention is an auction. So I mentioned in the beginning that you can have applicants that would apply for a community-based string, but you can also have applicants that would apply what we are calling now an open a generic string, and they are not tailoring to any specific community, and they're saying this string will be applied to anyone and, you know, everywhere in the world. And if you have, in this particular case, two applicants that are for identical or similar string, they would go through an auction process. So what happens next? ICANN board needs still to approve the policy that, and we're expecting them to approve this policy sometime in the coming months. ICANN staff needs to finalize the implementation. So a lot of those steps still need to be refined, like, for instance, the costs that I mentioned to you, the actual auction model that will be used, and the rules around comparative evaluation, the specific criteria that's going to be used for evaluating an applicant from a business and a technical standpoint, and so forth. We have done a lot of research, a lot of assessments. We have a lot of considerations still to be made. So, you know, there's still some work that we need to do from an implementation standpoint. We're also going to have a global communications campaign launch. And what this means is that we are doing as much as possible outreach and awareness around the world about the program. And there are three major milestones that this global communications campaign drives. One is the publication of the draft RFP. This is an important milestone because this is for the first time that potential applicants in the community will be able to see the whole RFP or all of the rules, everything put together for the applicant. And this is also an excellent opportunity for the community to comment on it. You know, look at all of the rules. You will have there also the draft base agreement that the registrars or successful applicants would have to sign with ICANN when they reach that stage. So this is an opportunity for the whole community to look at how this implementation process was designed and comment on it. After we have this draft RFP and this public comment period on the draft RFP, we will then review everything that all the comments that we got in and verify what has or maybe not be changed into the RFP. After this happens, there's the publication of the final RFP. And in the publication of the final RFP, this is the final set of rules, and this is what the applicants will see in an automated form once they apply for the TLD. And this is the opportunity that they have to truly prepare for all of the application process in advance. Then we have what we call the go-live period, and this is the preset application period that applicants would be able to apply for a TLD. And we envision that to be something maybe 45 days to 60 days, something that would allow people to not rush through, but carefully, you know, navigate through the system and apply for the TLD. More specific information about the workflow, the policy, as I said, and updates on the new GTOG, what we're doing, specific public comment participations, you can find at the ICANN website. Once you are on the ICANN website, there's a specific web page called New GTOG Program or New GTODs. If you have questions, you can also reach us at newgtod@icann.org. Another way to find more information is to attend ICANN meetings, and specifically for Paris, we are going to have a new GTOD, Shaping the Future of the Internet event, and that takes place on Monday, and I forgot the exact day, on a Monday of the ICANN meeting, I think 23rd. And this is going to be one of the events related to the new GTODs at the Paris meeting. In addition to that, please feel free to talk to ICANN staff at the meetings. We are going to have a booth at the Paris meeting, and on Sunday and Tuesday we'll have staff that works on the new GTOD program and will be able to answer questions or specific questions that we have. So that's it from me, Nick. If you want to open to questions.
Can I ask a question? This is Peter from Australia. Can I go ahead?
Sure, please.
Yes. What do you expect the role of the Government Advisory Committee to be during this process? For example, will they have a role in determining the list of reserved names? Will they have an explicit role in the objection process?
So my understanding, and all of, you know, jump in whenever you want. My understanding is that the GAC
an
advisory
joined
role, and they have been advising the board and ICANN about certain issues related to the implementation on new GTODs, so country names and things like, or geopolitical names and things like that. The objection process applies to anyone. Any objector. It could be a company, it could be individuals, it could be also be government. So there are different recommendations, different grounds for objection based on the recommendation, and government could use that. Now, we are aware that sometimes this is not, it's not a very easy thing for government because it's a period of time that objections can take place, and there's some cost that is related to objections. But the objection period that is designed right now looks at any kind of objector being able to object.
Do you hear me or do I need to unmute?
We can hear you.
We can hear.
Well, very well. Now, it should be said as well that GAC has contributed very, very much to the already in the policy development process, and the principles that they put forward have in many cases been taken straight on board in the GNSO recommendations. So already from the outset there are GAC views and principles that have been brought into the whole process and into the policy and into the implementation as such. So in addition to the role that you mentioned, I would suppose that that would continue during now when we have the draft RFP stage coming up, that we'll receive similar comments and perhaps corrections from the GAC as from all the other advisory committees and supporting organizations and community at large.
I believe Hong has a question. Hong, you may need to *7.
I'd also like to be put in the queue for a question. It's Bo Brendler.
Why don't you go now since Hong, we can't seem to hear.
Okay. Well, first, a quick apology for joining the call late. Some news came out earlier this week, a McAfee study on domains that pointed out that .info was one of the unsafest domains on the web, a source of a great deal of bad activity and haven for criminals and
joined,
so on and so forth. I'm just wondering, in light of some of the things that Consumer Reports WebWatch and the ALAC said about the implementation phase of new GTLDs, if there are appropriate or indeed any measures being taken to have some security and stability requirements in place for new GTLDs.
Well, if I can start, and Carla, you can fill in on that. I mean, of course, it's an overriding concern for everybody that, well, the Internet as an enabler does enable a lot of things also of an undesirable nature. And of course, it's every steps are taken to try to prevent that. Of course, this is a race as well where new methods of producing undesired effects like fast flux hosting and what have you, well, are also developed at a particular pace. So it's a bit of a race. And of course, we've got the policy development processes where these measures are developed when new aberrations, one could say, are discovered. And you're well aware, I think, that such policy development is going on for example, domain tasting, as well as for fast flux. And also, it should be mentioned that all GTLDs, and that's a particularity for GTLDs, are, of course, and will be, all of the new ones, contractually obliged to abide by and follow the consensus policies. But of course, there'll be provisions as well in the round as such, like, for example, requesting that the applicant describes what measures he or she or it will take in order to combat undesirable activity on within their TLD. So they will be required that they produce a security policy, for example. So, well, this is a major theme, of course, and but indeed, it is something that's addressed in multiple ways as well. Paula, do you have something to add there?
Carla, you're muted.
Nothing. Mute off.
No, I think it was very good, Olaf. Just to clarify, during the evaluation of the applicant itself, besides the business evaluation, as I mentioned, there's a technical one, operational one, and we asking the registries, you know, what kind of business continuity planning you have, what kind of registry free over provisioning and the security policy that they have, and are they conforming with the internet standards that we have so far and the DNS protocol that we have so far that they will have to comply. So we are really looking at the registry to demonstrate that they are aware of issues and what is it that you are doing in order to address those issues.
Hong, perhaps you would go next. I think you're unmuted now.
Well, okay. Oh, thank you very much. I do have a couple of questions. The most important one is on confusing similarity. I wonder whether it has been raised by somebody else. It is so interesting that I do want to hear from you. There have been a couple of discussions on the definition of confusing similarity, and I see you raise this issue in the slides. That is, a strength is going to cause confusion should not be allowed to be applied. So I want to know, what is your definition or understanding on confusing similarity? Is it limited to virtual similarity or graphical similarity, or has been extended to phonetical similarity and semantic similarity. The third level will be very controversial, especially in the context of IDNs. And also, I want to relate this question to the second one, that is how to ensure the user's participation in the new GTLD evaluation process. I quite understand ICANN wish to have some expert committees to evaluate the new GTLD applications. But with respect to similarity, it is not only an issue that should be judged by the experts. The people, the ordinary people who are really going to use them, should have a say in the process of making judgment. So I wonder how to make sure that the user community participate in this evaluation process. I have other questions, but I save time for other people. That is, thank you.
I start, Carla? Well, to start with, I think, well, we don't want to have confusingly similar top-level domains. I think that's obvious. Now, the question that you raise is, of course, to what extent does confusion appear? I mean, nobody would like to have, for example, if you take Citibank.com, but com spelled with the C0M. That's a kind of confusion that it's part and parcel of consumer protection, I would say. Whether that would stretch all the way into that there would be a likelihood of confusion on the part of the end users, because that's, I think, the test that one wants to make. When you go into semantic similarity. Now, this was discussed in the GNSO, and I remember the Amsterdam meeting when it was brought up, .jobs, for example, and it was generally felt that a translation of .jobs into .arbeit or .travail or .robota, if we go into Russian or something, would not cause confusion and would be deemed as separate TLDs, which could operate quite separately and have different targets and so on. So just to give you a glimpse on how the discussions were before the recommendations actually were finally crafted and worded and then being implemented. So I think the current idea for the implementation, if I recall it right, is that we will have a preliminary test by using an algorithm, and based on that make some initial decisions, but at the same time there is a possibility to launch objections on grounds on confusing similarity, and that would then be handled by an outside body, a dispute resolution provider, I could imagine that objections could come on grounds of semantic similarity. Whether those would be upheld is something else. But perhaps, Carla, if you could elaborate a little on that.
I think that was good, Olof. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Just to clarify that during the evaluation process on string similarity, we are looking at the visual similarity. So the algorithm is being used as a tool that would deal with scalability issues and would allow us to do reporting and would allow us to, you know, the first basically round of track, so to speak, on the TLDs that are being applied for. the string confusion can happen not only with an existing TOD or reserve name, but can also happen with another applicant. So one applicant applies for a string that is similar to another applicant in the same ground, in the same round. So this is one of the situations in which we have a mechanism that is the string contention mechanism, because, you know, to address that specific issue in which you have two or more applicants for identical or similar strings in the first round. So in addition to the objection process and in addition to the algorithm, there's also going to be an examiner's panel that would look at the string. So it's not the algorithm that's making a final judgment. We have a set of experts that are still looking into specifically defining the role and who's going to be and so forth, to look at the strings and identify whether or not there is this string confusion. Also, after the TODs have been applied for, there's going to be a public comment period. So the community has an opportunity during this public comment period to comment on specific strings or applicants, and and they can at this point identify or, you know, say something about whether or not this is going to cause an issue. Right now, as we are developing the process, the string confusion evaluation is limited to visual. Now, the objection is a different step. If there's a third party objection to this, objecting to the string, we are looking at the guidelines for this objection to be beyond that, like, you know, it's done nowadays, that you just mentioned, sight, meaning, and sound. But right now, the evaluation itself has to do with the visual confusion.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Are you still there?
Indeed. We're all here.
It went awfully quiet.
Yes, do we have any...
It's all the muting. Are there other questions?
Nobody else has a question, I have another question. That is, in the early stage of discussions on new GTLD, there had been some proposals on the so-called low entry barriers for applications from developing countries. If those applicants from developing countries or even from LDCs have difficulty in fulfilling the technical or financial requirements for new GTLD, is it possible to consider their special situation, apply the special treatment for them?
I think this was mirrored in one of the implementation guidelines from the GNSO that ICANN may establish, first of all, a capacity building and support mechanism for those, for example, which are not very familiar with English and so on, and also could have put in place a fee reduction scheme for GTLD applicants from LDC economies. This is, if I understand it right, Carla, correct me if I'm wrong, but we've been looking at those 50-odd countries which are classified as LDC and figuring whether
Carlton
should
join.
We should pursue this in one way or another, what measures we must take to avoid that it's been, as all particular provisions can be gamed. That's also a major concern from our part, to prevent that it becomes a way of gaming applications. But I'm not really sure where we are on that. Carla, help me.
We are really making an assessment
on what we could do that it relates to the application fee, if anything, how to avoid or prevent some kind of gaming, and also is there anything that can be done in case of auction if applicants from these countries would reach that point. We have not made a final decision on how this would work. It's really right now under the assessment phase.
Thank you.
Oh, it's Philip here. There's a question?
Yeah, a question from me. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Dirk from Dot Berlin. Carla, we are still in a more or less vacuum room regarding the timelines. So I have seen in the last couple of months from Los Angeles via Delhi to the Inter meeting in Berlin, quite different timelines when the application window starts and so on and so on. Are there any news from this point?
We'll be talking more about timelines at Paris, Dirk, but you have to take into account that there's a lot of work being done by the ICANN staff, and the policy itself took, I believe, 2 years to be done. Those are not small issues or not small considerations that we need to take while doing the implementation. I know that the initial timeline was quite aggressive. You know, it should be launching sometime this year. I think that considering everything that we still need to put in place, not only from a development standpoint, but also from third-party providers that need to be engaged, the finalizing the dispute resolution service providers, who is doing what, at what point, and so forth. I think we are looking at the beginning of 2009 for the open application period.
Okay.
You also have to look to the fact that as we post the draft RFP, the draft RFP has to be posted for public comment for at least a month, which is the minimum that ICANN usually does when we have a public comment period. In this particular case, we are putting out there quite a comprehensive document for public comment. So even a month is, I don't think, is quite enough, but this is the minimum that we are going to do. Now, that said, we don't know at this point what kind of feedback we are going to get from the community and what kind of corrections this draft RFP will need to have. So, and this is a very important step or milestone in the process for us as we design this implementation, to have the community's input on this whole process. So we don't know how much this is going to actually require us to make modifications from the draft to the final RFP.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I believe there was also another question.
It's Philip here. Jenna, sir, do you hear me?
Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah. Carla, just a follow-up question on confusing similarity. What's the timing on the production of the algorithm for optical similarity?
The timeline for the production of the algorithm to be available for the community.
Well, I mean, maybe even an evaluation version you'll have a look at.
Yeah, so we would like to make the algorithm and all the parameters, the information about the algorithm available when we post the draft RFP.
So not before then?
Maybe.
The reason I'm asking the question is the challenge to your supplier to produce such an algorithm is not insignificant. And I think it's once they come up with their solution, it may be useful to get a few people in staff and elsewhere and the volunteers to have a look at what they're proposing.
Oh, absolutely. And so right now in the planning, we have a series of workshops and a series of, you know, steps that need to be taken in order to develop this algorithm or to shape this algorithm, so to speak. And you can imagine that with IDNs and everything else, this is not a small task.
Indeed.
You know, and that's why I'm being very conservative in saying, okay, when is this going to be available? Because we need to make sure that, you know, we do well, the basic work before this is available to the community.
Hmm.
But also, please take into account that the algorithm is not the only deterministic evaluation step on string confusion. We also have, we'll be putting together the panel of examiners.
Sure.
Do we have any other question?
One question, Roger Castillo from .lat Initiative. I'm aware that you've been doing some work on the relation between the registry and the registrar, the possibility of the registry to be also the registrar. Can you explain something on it, on that matter?
So there's an economic study and, you know, evaluation.
Oh, what happened?
To that specific matter. But I am not particularly aware of any change right now. All of you want to elaborate on that?
Not much more than to say that, well, as the policy goes, well, the registries, new GTLD registers were supposed to work in the registrar model. So actually, use registrars and only ICANN accredited registrars, and may not discriminate among such accredited registrars, if I call it vaguely correct, something of the sort. So that's where the policy stands. In one of the recommendations, actually, so it's part of the core recommendations from the GNSO.
Yeah, but this is an ongoing discussion with the community, right, Olaf?
Indeed. I mean, there, of course, have been brought forward cases where the registrar model would be perhaps inappropriate.
Or limited.
Justified. So, well, and that was already the case during the GNSO policy discussions. So, and voices were heard already then. So exactly where we'll end up in particular cases of new GTLDs, well, it's probably beyond me, but perhaps within your reach, Carla.
Well, okay. I just asked because I remember there were some discussion or comments about it on a previous board meetings. Maybe Kurt said something about it. That's why I asked.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Mute all. Mute all is now off.
Any further questions? I think everything was just muted there briefly for a moment, so if you spoke up, we may not have heard you.
Just Cheryl here. At the moment, I was about to say, if there aren't any other questions, perhaps it's time as we move it to the close of the hour to thank the guest speakers most heartily for what I thought was a very informative and useful briefing. But, of course, you muted me as I started to say that.
But we're glad that you said it afterward.
Left.
Yeah, no, really, it has been most useful, and I would like some feedback, if possible, from any of the participants on how useful or otherwise they find the Adobe tool and hybrid system with the Adigo phone bridge that we're trialling at the moment for our AI thing. So any information you can give back to the staff would be most useful. I'm sure Nick will now be besieged by positive comments, but I certainly would like to thank everybody, both participants and presenters.
And particularly thanks to Carla for getting up very early in the morning.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
Oh, now that's a very silly thing.
Ella Bozo for RNA Partners.
Left.
Outside for your attention and interest and your questions, and perhaps we should follow up by having the proper presentation circulated by email or something, or get it glued up in a proper way, since we had a few mishaps with the missing pie chart, as well as some formatting errors on one of the slides, just for good measure.
We will be circulating a note to Glenn and the like on both of the briefings this week, so that they can be posted for those who wish to review them and the recordings later.
Nick?
Yes?
This is Carlton. Would the recording be translated?
We can certainly talk about that. I think in the first instance we should perhaps translate the PowerPoint.
Yeah, that might be useful.
Yes.
Especially to Spanish.
And I know Carla, you can address this if you wish. I know that a number of informative materials are being produced for the new GTLD program, which I believe are, at least some of them are already in the translation pipeline.
That's right. We're going to have the issues document. We're going to have the fact sheet.
Left.
A basic fact sheet, and those and the policies. Also, right now we have on our website the policy work, which is a very comprehensive set of very comprehensive information, but we have summarized only the policies, and we're translating all of those materials at least in 5 languages at this point. We will also be updating the new GTOD website to include the simplified process flow that now you can find at the GENESO web page.
Roger Castillo.
So all of the materials that we produce and all of the updates and information will be posted on the new GTOD page. We're trying to keep the new GTOD page as being the main tool for information to the community at this point.
I also would say, I think I'm right in saying this, but this briefing is being, is this briefing being simultaneously interpreted or not, Matthias? I forget.
I didn't see Spanish or French channels running. We did do that in Fast Talk.
Nick, sorry, there is no interpretation for this meeting.
Yeah, it was no. I forgot.
No.
Requesting it. The briefing, we do have recordings of the interpretation into Spanish and French.
Yeah. And the event that we have on video in France, we are going to have interpretation.
Left.
So we're working on it, Carlton.
Very well. Thank you. Thank you.
Keep trying there, Carlton. Keep asking.
No harm in asking. I know you will. Carlton is the secretary of the LAC RALO, Carla and Bluff, where about half the participants are Spanish-speaking and about half are English-speaking.
Yeah. I can speak Spanish the next presentation, no problem.
Oh, that would be lovely. They'd love to hear that.
Yo también.
As long as there's an English channel for me, I'll be happy.
Absolutely. I think between Olaf and myself, we can present in, what, 6-7 languages, Olaf?
Including Swedish, in case anybody's interested.
Yeah, so probably 8.
Well, we be careful. You may be taken up on that. We might set you in front of a microphone and ask you to rabbit on for several hours, repeating yourself.
Oops.
Well, thanks very much. And I guess we should adjourn this.
Yes.
Thank you all.
Yes, this is Frederick speaking. How are you?
Not at all. This is being recorded, guys, so you might wish to...
Sure. Yes. I know, but... Captain?
Nordling.
Left.
Hello?
Captain?
Left.
Yes, Frederick.
Left. So I just take the opportunity to talk to you now. Can I call you on your cell right now?
Yes, you can. I have about 10 minutes.
Okay, the same number as usual, yes?
Yeah, 876-383.
Left.
3964.
Just hold on. 876.
Left.
383.
Left.
Yeah. 3964.
Daisy King.
Left.
Okay.
Nick.
I'm calling you right now. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Left.
Carla.
Left.
Frederick.
Left. Left.
Carlton.
Left.